From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I have only in recent years tuned into mushrooms really at all, despite much of a life spent engaged with the outdoors. So when I saw a review in late summer of a new book called The Way Through the Woods on Mushrooms and Mourning, part memoir, part primer on fungi, it caught my attention. More in a moment, but first this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
The Way Through the Woods on Mushrooms and Mourning is by today's guest, Longlet Woon, an anthropologist originally from Malaysia who has spent her adult life living in Norway. It's at once both an invitation to the astonishing world of fungi and also the personal story of a path of healing from great grief. Welcome, Woon, and thank you so much for making time in your travels to talk today.
Thank you very much, Margaret, for having me.
I love watching your travel adventures on Instagram. And wow, this book has been translated into how many languages and countries already?
Well, at the moment, 14. Yeah, so it was quite surprising for me, yes.
It's a wonderful thing. It's amazing. It resonated, which is wonderful. And I'll say before we get started in our chat that there's going to be a book giveaway with the transcript of the show on awaytogarden.com.
Okay,
so I'll invite people to that as well and so forth. But So the book begins, on a sad note, with the revelation that your husband, who I believe was then just 54 years old, went to work one day and did not return. And I want you to set up the premise of the book, The Mushrooms and the Mourning, for us.
Well, yes, you're right. I mean, my husband dies on page one.
Yes.
So, and I talk about how this very sudden death puts me in a very, very dark place, and how very, very slowly mushrooms saved me and brought me in a way back to life again.
Yes.
So that is what the book is about. Yeah.
Yes, and reflections on him come in every so often, but much of the book is about your adventure in getting to know mushrooms. So it has an unusual structure. It's kind of two kinds of writing are in there. But, you know, the fact that, like I think you say in it, seemingly unrelated subjects such as mushrooms and mourning can, in fact, be connected, and they are. They definitely are. So you suffered this sudden loss, and somehow you found yourself at an introductory meeting at the Natural History Museum in Oslo. Is that where it was?
Yes.
Of the Greater Oslo Fungi and Useful Plant Society. You're very funny, by the way. You say that the name of the Greater Oslo Fungi and Useful Plant Society sounded like a sister organization to the Norwegian Women's Hygiene Association. So there you were, and you were at this meeting, and what happened? How did you end up there anyway?
Oh, it was just by chance.
Yeah.
But basically, I after my husband died, I joined this bereavement group, and for people who had lost someone, and I didn't know anybody, but you know, I'm not used to being in this kind of group therapy sessions, but I just did it because I knew I needed something, and I was desperately looking for help, for relief, and there, I met people in the same situation as myself. So, and you could see that everybody was, in a way, at the same stage. Everybody was looking for relief, actually, and so they were sharing things they'd done. Of course, some people had done yoga, others had tried meditation, and then somebody mentioned this course, you know, and plants, and I thought, yeah, why not? You know, I'll do anything, because I was desperate. So I just went there. But of course, it was not as though I was not anti-mushrooms, but I was just mildly interested in mushrooms, and my husband was too. So yeah, so I started. This course. Yeah.
Serendipity, then.
That's right.
Yeah, and so we're then treated to sort of some of your descriptions of mushroom people, and you eventually learn about some of their secret places for foraging, and this whole other world, this whole other community. And you say that your training as an anthropologist in some ways prepared you for this journey. Tell me a little bit about that, sort of this exploration that you ended up on.
Well, so yeah, so this was a basic course in mushrooming, but of course, you know, people do mushrooming. So I met this group of you know, mushroom pickers, mushroomers, you know, the mad mushroomers, you know, and I was just fascinated by them. And of course, it's because of my training as an anthropologist that I became very drawn to this too. So not only the mushrooms, but also the mushroom pickers, you know, who I write about in my book, you know, and of course, so this book charts the, you know, two journeys, this outer journey, my discovery of this kingdom of fungi and this weird tribe of mushroomers, you know, and how I started by being a novice and looking at these mushroomers from the outside, and how through the journey of the book, you know, I learn a lot about mushrooms, but I also become, you know, one of these mad mushroomers.
So that is
the outer journey. And then, of course, the inner journey is in this landscape of grief. And so the book is about how these two journeys are intertwined.
Mm. Yeah, so so you're confessing to be a mad mushroomer, are you? confessed,
well,
yeah.
I was madder before, but yes, I've been very, mad. But now more just normal mad.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the things that you or someone who would go to such a class would learn in that first class. What's a mushroom? Animal, vegetable, or mineral, or none of the above? What's a mushroom?
None of the above. And that shocked me too, because I thought, you know, mushrooms, you go to the supermarket, you find them among the vegetables. So you think that, you know, I thought it was just a strange type of vegetable, but no, you know, so mushrooms, they constitute their own kingdom. And, you know, and has its own, you know, evolution in this whole evolution of life on our planet. You know, it has its own, its own separate, it's its own kingdom, you know. So it's neither one or the other. It's just, the kingdom of fungi. Yeah.
I laughed out loud. You have just a little line in there somewhere where you're talking about learning whether they're animal, vegetable, mineral, or none of the above, where you mentioned that Linnaeus, you know, the father of taxonomy, he's like trying to classify them, what, in the 1700s or something, and he placed them, some of them at least, in chaos with a capital C.
Yeah, so this, you know, a lot of people have been thinking about this for a long time.
Yeah, he was so frustrated trying to categorize them. Even he, who was, you know, the one who was supposed to make order, he said, I can't, you know.
I give up.
He kind of banished them to this other place. So how diverse are the fungi, you know, compared to, say, mammals? I think you use that example in the book. Like, how much of the population of the number of species on the planet are in this kingdom?
I think you said
20% versus mammals.
Yes, and much, much more than mammals.
Mammals are like less than 1%, I think.
I think it was, two or something like that. So it's much, much more. So that we are surrounded by fungi.
Yeah.
But of course, a lot of them are tiny. You know, you don't see them. You think of mushrooms as the, you know, the cremini, the button mushrooms you see in the supermarket. But of course, I mean, we are surrounded by mushrooms.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And they, like you just said, I mean, we think of, you know, the ones in the supermarket and the vegetable section that have a cap and a white stem, you know, they look like a, quote, mushroom iconic shape. But once you tune in, and through a friend, a neighbor who's a mycologist, I've been going on walks and learning a little bit, not like you, but once you go out and allow yourself to start to see them, you see them everywhere.
Exactly. Yes, and that is what has happened too with this book, because, okay, I have, you know, a lot of editors around the world now, and now, you know, they are sending me pictures of mushrooms that they see on the way to work, you know. I mean, they're but not really interested in mushrooms before, you know. They just were interested in this book as a piece of literature, you know. And now they are seeing mushrooms all over the place.
Yes. Yeah. In the between the cracks, when we had a wet spell recently this fall up where I am in New York State, and between the cracks in the pavement in the some shady areas, you know, little knobby flat things in clusters, and then other places there's a big gleaming glistening orange thing, what is that called,
the jack-o'-lantern mushroom.
Yeah. And another place there's those ones that are melting with the black ink dripping down, the inky caps, you know, the
ink caps.
And you know, they do puff balls, and they don't, none of them, they don't look like a mushroom, a lot of them. They don't.
Do you know what I mean? I know. And when you start, learning what you can eat and cooking them separately, the edible mushrooms, you discover very quickly that they all taste very different.
Very different.
And they have different textures, consistencies, you know. There's nothing, I mean, to say that something smells mushroomy, it's sort of like, I think only people who do not know enough about mushrooms would say a thing like that.
Yeah.
You know, because because they smell very different.
Here we are in this beginning class, and we learn that they're in their own kingdom, and that they're very diverse, and so then we want to start looking. Maybe we go out on a walk with the instructor, and we see one and we want to get to know it. Where do you even begin? I think you say in the book, to know your mushrooms, you have to, sort of use all your senses. You have to. So where do you're out on a walk and or you're taking people on a walk? What do? We dig it up. We look at it. We smell it. What do?
Well, first you have to spot the mushroom, and sometimes they are not so easy to spot because they could be under some leaves or other, you know, organic matter. So first you have to find the mushroom, and then it's good to go on such a walk with somebody who knows about mushrooms. So don't just go out there with a field guide in hand.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, don't do that.
Right.
Go with somebody who knows, a local person, and preferably, you know, as part of a course, a local course, and so you are part of a group and you can discuss. Everybody will have questions, and you can, you know, learn your mushrooms one by one. And basically you have to go out, because this is not, you know, theoretical knowledge. This is practical knowledge.
Yes.
If you're ever going to want to pick them and eat them, because they, you know, very often in books they look perfect, you know.
Yes.
And they don't all look like that out in the woods. And also, you know, they look very different, like when they are young and when they are middle age, and then when they are very old, they look all very different to the one same species. So you need to go out if you want to learn anything about mushrooms.
Yeah, with someone who can mentor you.
That
So this, you've referred to the edible aspect or not, and the sort of can you eat it question. It comes up early in the experience of anyone who goes mushrooming, and also in the book. And yet throughout the book there seems to be from time to time a little bit of a tension around. You have one chapter called 50 Shades of Poison. You know, there's all these horrible stories of mushrooms are feared, and this darkness about them. And so there's a little bit of a maybe defensiveness in do people just ask about that all the time? About can you eat this? Can you eat that?
Yes, people do that. And of course people have this fear of mushrooms, which I think is very good, because, you know, the reason why people fear mushrooms is because they've heard about all this poisoning. They've heard all these poisoning stories, and they know that some mushrooms are deadly. So I think it's very good that people are afraid of mushrooms. But however, the point is that they are afraid because they do not know their mushrooms. Because if you know your mushrooms, you would know what to pick, and you can pick them confidently, and you would not be afraid. The reason why you're afraid is because you do not have the knowledge. But for a start, I think it's good that people are afraid, because then that, you know, will stop them from just picking anything and putting it into their mouths.
Yes. Yes. I was surprised that one of the anecdotes, you know, you're on a walk. I don't remember exactly where in the book, but I think early on, you're on a walk with the club or some leader, and the people pass around the mushroom, and everyone takes a sniff of it, like smells mm-hmm. it. And then there's this wonderful section about the scent of mushrooms, and just trying to describe scent is virtually impossible. The chemistry of scent is so tough. And how some of the descriptors of how we're supposed to, like, figure out the idea of a mushroom partly by what it looks like and what its gills look like underneath the cap, if it has them, and the color and the size and the this and the that and where it is. But then also the scent, and then there's these words in the scent descriptions in the old guidebooks that I don't even know what those words mean, let alone what it smells like. Do you know
no.
what I mean?
And basically, yes. And that is why I have this whole chapter, because this was so difficult for me. And I felt too that, we do not have words for smell. We have very few words. We always use similes, you know. So we'll say, this smells like, you know, strawberry, or this smells like apricots, or this smells like a raw potato. We don't have a word for that particular smell. And smell is also very individual.
Yes.
And individuals themselves too would smell things different. You know, our sense of smell changes too, you know. You know, if you're on medication, it could affect your sense of smell, and so on. So, but smell is very important, and this is one of the ways in, you know, the connection between mushrooms and mourning. Because when my husband died, you know, I felt as though all my senses were just knocked.
Yes.
Just shut down, you know, and you know, I didn't feel like eating, because food, you know, tasted like paper, had no taste, and so on. But being out in the woods and being forced to use all my senses in order to identify these mushrooms sort of like woke me up again, you know, sort of like flicked the switch on, you know, for my senses, you know. So that was definitely one of the ways in which these two very disparate topics are connected for me. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mentioned at the beginning that you travel a lot, and I like seeing where you're at on your Instagram and so forth. But so does that mean, though, that again and again, every place you go, if then you go out mushrooming, are you returned to the position of being a beginner mushroomer because you have to meet the local population at each new place? Or are there some sort of like global species or some, do you know what I mean? Because you started in Norway. Yeah.
You're right. I mean, you're right, because local knowledge is very important. Mm. And I write too in the book how, you know, very, very often the people who get poisoned by mushrooms are immigrants, no matter which country you're in. You know, so because they go out mushrooming, like in Norway, they go out mushrooming and they find something which looks very much alike what they know from home, and which is a delicious mushroom. And if you're really unlucky, this is a deadly mushroom in this other new place. Yes. So that's why local knowledge is very important. Of course, I'm not a beginner the way I was when I started, because now at least I can place, if I find a mushroom, I can place it in you know, in a group or in a family. I'll know where, you know, which type of mushroom we are talking about. But I will never be 100% sure of the species. I really would need a local person, a local guide. So, but the good thing, of course, when I'm traveling right now with my book and talking about it, is that a lot of local people want to show me their secret spots. You know, so I've been mushrooming all over the place now, and people are happy to show me their spots.
Yeah, Yeah, I was interested, and again, I'm in, you know, the Hudson Valley of New York State, so not in Norway. And yet I saw you mention mushrooms that I'm familiar with, I believe, like the, is it Shaggy Mane or Inky Cap? Is that what is it, Coprinus? Is that what it is, Coprinus?
Yes, Comatis? Yes. Coprinus is the group, yeah.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned the puffballs. You mentioned jack-o'-lantern.
Yes.
And so is that because in parts of Europe and parts of North America we have species in common? Is that the case?
Yes, it is
the case. We have. Yes. Okay, I see.
Yeah. And I have this this little anecdote in my book about the matsutake, you know, this mushroom that the Japanese love and which the Norwegians do not love, and it took a while before, you know, scientists discovered that we are actually talking about the same mushroom, you know, the same species. So yes, I mean, you can find mushrooms, you know, the same species could spread, you know, worldwide. In fact, there are maps, you know, if you go into the internet, you can find
distribution maps, range maps,
You how, you know, certain species, you know, how they spread and how widespread they are.
So in the last few minutes, I wanted to talk about eating mushrooms, because one of the main reasons, you say in the book, one of the main reasons I got into mushrooms was that I like eating them. And then you talk about, but maybe the way we approach cooking them isn't, you know, melt some butter in the pan, put the mushrooms in and fry them up. Maybe that's not right after all. So tell us a little bit about other ways to approach enjoying mushrooms, cooking mushrooms.
Okay, I do have a chapter in the book with some recipes.
And yes.
I will not say that it's not right. I mean, you can do whatever you want with your mushrooms.
But it's not the only way.
It was just, it's not the only way. That was my point. It's not the only way. And in fact, going back to the matsutake again, I found out that maybe the reason why Norwegians do not like the matsutake is because they've been cooking it wrongly, because they fry it in butter,
I see.
and the taste molecules in the matsutake, they are released only in contact with water, not with fat, you know.
Yes.
So that's why the Japanese cook it in soups, or they put it in their rice, or, you know, things like that. So anyway, that's one thing. And the other thing about cooking mushrooms is that we are used to thinking about them as savories. You know, you have salt and pepper, and you have it in a pie or something like that. However, there are some very creative mushroomers in this Norwegian club, mushrooming club, and who love cooking. And one day I was at the mushroom party, and somebody brought a cake, you know, with this a mushroom cake, you know, made from porcini. And what it had was, okay, this was a take on a classical Norwegian cake, which is called the Tosca cake. You know, Tosca is in the opera.
Yes.
And the Norwegian Tosca cake has a top, you know, like the creme brulee, you know, it is like croquant, it is crispy on the top, you know, hard, and then you can hit it with a spoon and then it will crack. And the normal Norwegian Tosca cake has got almonds on the top. So it's like a almond brittle. Yes. Mm-hmm. Almond brittle. However, this woman had come with a cake, and she had used porcini. What you call bolitz, the king bolitz.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
She used that as the brittle on the top of this sweet cake, you know, and it was amazing. So after that, I started looking for other recipes, you know, where you could use mushrooms in desserts. And of course, I mean, you know, mushroom taste is just a taste. You could stretch it, you know, to the left and make it savory. You can take it to the right and make them into desserts, you know. So I have some recipes for like chanterelle ice cream and stuff like that.
I loved the book. Long Lit Wounds, The Way Through the Woods on Mushrooms and Mourning. I love the book, and I know that listeners and readers of the blog are going to love it too. So I'm so glad you made time to speak today. And thank you, and happy travels. You're on many adventures, and I hope you see all kinds of new life list mushrooms.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon as well. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or at Facebook or on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.